Big Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love's undivided.
You either go to church or you're going to go to hell. Get a job and work or you're going to go to jail.
Radio broadcast. This Monday, October 10, 2022. And so, what is the apex of the conspiracy? Well, in simple terms, what we've been hearing about the Middle East is not – this is – I think this is terrifying for Americans because, you know, we have been fed the myth of American primacy, as they say, guys like Brzezinski, or the American exceptionalist myth. That's the American dream, American exceptionalism. Speaking of folks like Megan O'Sullivan and the, you know, that contingent, like Michael Rupert put it in Crossing the Rubicon, page 70, it is clear that everywhere there is oil, there is brown and root. But increasingly, everywhere there is war or insurrection, there's brown and root also. So, we know about the Yunnan plan, Oded Yunnan's plan. What was it, 1982, something like that? Greater Israel, Eretz Israel. And we know, you know, going back in history, this is something that's been going on for a while. Here, again, is, you know, many books talk about this, but J. Boyer Bell's Terror Out of Zion, The Violent and Deadly Shock Troops of Israeli Independence, 1929 to 49. Irgun, Zvi, Lumi, Lehi and the Palestine Underground. Published in 1977. And, of course, as I've mentioned many times, page 12. When these aborted, he regrouped in August 1897 and created a new organization, Herzl. And he wasn't, you know, he was just a figurehead. You got backstory, you know. Guys like Baron Edmund de Rothschild spending $50 million around the turn of the 20th century. Think about how much money. That was, you know, $300 a year was, you know, not bad. It's okay. You know, you could live on $300 a year in America. $50 million to acquire land in the area. So Theodore Herzl found himself transformed, and as a result, Zionism was as well. Herzl accepted the need for a Jewish state, and in Der Judenstaat argued that the problem was national. This is, you know, people talk about this terminology and stuff. This stuff was going on. I mean, you know, backing up, part one, Bell writes, you know, at the beginning of the 19th century, much began to change in the Middle East. In March 1799, Napoleon called upon the Jews to rally under their flag and restore Jerusalem of old. It was not until a half century had passed that Napoleon's seed took root. For most Jews in Western Europe anticipated their assimilation in the new nation states as Germans or Englishmen or the Hebrew persuasion, et cetera, et cetera. In 1840, the Damascus blood libel occurred, et cetera, et cetera. There was a pogrom in Odessa in 1871, et cetera, et cetera. Finally, the Dreyfus case in 1894 and 95 revealed deep-seated anti-Semitism, et cetera, et cetera. Zionism, a term not coined until 1886 by the Austrian journalist Nathan Birnbaum, coalesced around several complementary ideas. But I would say that was when it was publicly coined. Again, government by journalism, W.T. Stead. Let's see. To the Arabs, these Jews were the children of death. They watched their sacrifice without understanding, with limited sympathy. Gradually, as a result of grinding labor, the contributions of sympathizers, especially Baron Edmund de Rothschild, and a will to persist, et cetera, et cetera. So, Herzl found his life transformed, and as a result, Zionism was as well. Herzl accepted the need for a Jewish state, and in Der Judenstaat argued that the problem was national and the solution political. He sought such a solution not by linguistic revivals, promises of redemption, or new agricultural settlements, but by diplomatic initiatives. When these aborted, he regrouped in August 1897 and created a new organization, over 200 delegates. Why this guy? How does he, you know, what power does he have? In August 1897, created a new organization, over 200 delegates to the Zionist Congress met in Basel for 3 days and established the World Zionist Organization. Herzl felt the first great practical step had been taken. And he was asked, you know, he said, if I had to sum up what happened at the Congress of Basel, I would say that I founded the Jewish state. This would provoke universal laughter today, but perhaps in 20 years, and certainly in 50, it will be there for all the world to see. Perhaps in 20, certainly in 50. So within 20 years, you had the Balfour Declaration, which wasn't Arthur James Balfour, as folks like Carol Quigley told us. It was the power behind the throne. And these forces were already at work. You can read about the plan and things that guys like H.G. Wells wrote in 1901. We'll get to that. So what's really going on here? You know, James Corbett says Albert Pike didn't write a letter to Mazzini. Okay, well, that's funny because everything is going according to plan, comrades. And the plan I'm talking about is if you read, here's the spoiler. We'll just do this, and then we'll play a clip from 10 years ago Chuck Missler did, titled The Coming World Leader. So if you read H.G. Wells' The Shape of Things to Come, you will basically see what Chuck Missler said. You can jump on the Internet Archive find a digital copy. Search Basra. If you look at the footprint of the Greater Israel Initiative, the Yanan Plan, you will discover that it is strikingly similar to ancient Assyria. And then, of course, you know, you think about China's One Belt, One Road, the New Silk Road, the Belt and Road Initiative. That goes right through Baghdad. So H.G. Wells wrote about this new world order, essentially, that was headquartered in Basra. You know, he wrote, I think, Shape of Things to Come was published in 35, I want to say, and he wrote about a world war that would break out in a few short years. And then, you know, within a few short years. There was World War II, and he said that would last for like 20 years, and there would be a World Congress type thing in Basra. And then in about 13 more years, another World Congress in Basra. And this would be where the world dictatorship, you know, from where it would emanate, basically. Super creepy stuff. Maybe we'll get into that. But first, I want to play a little bit of the Chuck Missler thing for you. The coming world leader. Chuck Missler did this 10 years ago, and it was, you know, he'd been talking about it before then, but I think this is interesting. So go ahead, please. Yes, please.
The emerging world leader. There are 33 different titles for him in the Old Testament. Among the more well-known ones, the seed of the serpent in Genesis 3. He's the idol shepherd of Zechariah 11. That's the only physical description of the Antichrist in the Bible, and it is there. He's the little horn of Daniel 7 and Daniel 8. He's a horn is an ancient symbol of authority. He's the prince that shall come, as I've mentioned before. He's called the willful king in Daniel 11. And these are all in your notes, of course. And in the New Testament, there's 13 titles there. He's the beast of Revelation 11 and 13. He's called the false prophet in Revelation 13, the second of the two guys. The word Antichrist is a strange label, by the way. That's the one that sticks. That's the one we say Antichrist. We all think we know what we're talking about. It's a little weird because that word is only used by John. And it's not used of him. John uses the term in his letters to represent a spirit of Antichrist. He's not really talking about an individual per se. The word Antichrist doesn't mean against Christ, technically. It means in the place of Christ. A pseudo-Christ is more precise. Antichristos in the Greek isn't what it sounds like to us. Obviously, he's against Christ, but the word really means he's in the place of Christ. That's why there's all this talk about the Pope and all that sort of stuff. But in any case, what's interesting is John, who's the only guy that uses that term in a different context, in the entire book of Revelation doesn't use the term Antichrist. He uses several other terms, by the way. But nevertheless, that's the label that has stuck, if you will, in modern usage. So I won't fight that. Just be aware of the fact that it's a strange inversion here. He's called the lawless one in 2 Thessalonians 2. He's called the man of sin in 2 Thessalonians 2. Jesus calls him the one who comes in his own name. I come in my Father's name, you receive me not. Another comes in his own name, and him you will receive. That's why many of the experts believe he'll be Jewish. We don't know that. We know he's accepted by Israel for some weird reason, but whatever. Okay, so that's... And he's called the son of perdition in 2 Thessalonians 2. And... Is he a Jew or Gentile? There are good scholars that take both sides. Some say the leader will be the son of Satan. That's clearly from the scripture. Some believe the leader will be a Jew, and there's a whole bunch of arguments for that. And also there's some believe he'll be a Gentile, and there's a whole bunch of arguments for that. So you can take your pick. But when we get into those arguments, remember there's two guys. We're not talking about a single guy. There's a single political leader, but he has a religious priest promoting his worship, called the false prophet, as a second title of him, if you will. And so, coming world leader. The term that I would use, if I was writing in this area, is I'd call him Mr. Big Mouth. Because it's interesting, in Daniel 7, and in Daniel 11, in Psalm 52, in 2 Thessalonians 2, he is always shooting off his mouth. He's making arrogant claims. That's one of his characteristics. So if you want a title for him, I'd call him Mr. Big Mouth. Six times in the scripture he's called that. He will be a son of Satan in some sense. And he'll be an intellectual genius, obviously a brilliant guy. The guy that's coming is going to be fantastic. He is going to be the most attractive guy the world has ever seen. We'll know better by the Holy Spirit. But the world won't see that. They're going to see a guy with the answers, with a plan to help the world out of its mess. He'll be an oratorical genius. I don't think he needs teleprompters. Okay? He will be a political genius. He'll be a commercial genius. He will be a military genius. He comes to power by peacemaking, not by military, but he becomes so powerful that he will be militarily very, very able. He'll be a governmental genius. He'll be a religious genius. He's all of these things. The scripture supports every one of these. And there's a bunch of other passages in your notes you can take a look at if you're trying to get up to speed on who this guy is. And so Isaiah 10 gives us some identities here. Thus saith the Lord God of hosts, O my people that dwellest in Zion, be not afraid of the Assyrian. That's interesting. He shall smite thee with a rod, and he shall lift up his staff against thee after the manner of Egypt, and yet a very little while, and the indignation shall cease, and mine anger in their destruction. This is Isaiah talking in Isaiah 10. Look at Isaiah 15. That I will break the Assyrian in my land, upon my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off of them, and his burden depart from off their shoulders. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth. And this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. This world leader was originally Nimrod, who was an Assyrian. The first world leader was Nimrod, the Assyrian. The last world leader on the planet Earth will be an Assyrian. It's interesting. The symmetry, I think, is very provocative. And then will I break the Assyrian in my land, and so forth. The Lord shall cause his glorious voice to be heard, and he shall show the lightning down from his arm with the indignation of his anger and with the flame of the devouring fire and with scattering the tempest and the hailstones. For through the voice of the Lord shall the Assyrian be beaten down, which smote with... See, I want you to see, not get into the details, but you see the term Assyrians all through Micah and all through Isaiah as an identity here. And Micah 5, and this man shall be the peace when the Assyrian shall come into our land. And he shall tread in our palaces, and we rise against him with 7 shepherds and 8 principal men. And they shall waste the land of Assyria with the sword, and the land of Nimrod in the entrances thereof. Thus shall he deliver us from the Assyrian when he cometh into our land, when he treadeth within our borders. And again, we have the Assyrian, the Nimrod even again, and the Assyrian. So there's more homework to be done. Is he Muslim? Very likely. But that's not his defining characteristic. And the people, the prince that shall... There's a whole misunderstanding. In Daniel 9, verse 26, it says, the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. They were the Roman legions. But Roman legions were not necessarily European. The legions of Rome were conscripts. The 10th legion, which is the one that brought the temple down, were cohorts and auxiliaries from a number of cohorts that are all Assyrians. So the people of the prince that shall come were the ones that destroyed this. That linkage is what's caused many writers to presume that somehow it's a Western Europe player in the end times. But let's shift and talk about the mark of the beast. People who know nothing about the Antichrist all know about the 666. That's a very pop. There are books written that totally miss the point. Let's go at this. Revelation 13, and he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads.
Pause it. Perfect. All right, we'll come back to that. Come back to the mark and finish the rest. We're headed into a break here in a minute, but I'm telling you, just read H.G. Wells' The Shape of Things to Come. You will be astonished, I think, to see what was foreshadowed almost 100 years ago now. These guys have been up to no good, and they've been telling us right out of plain view. And I think I'll read some of it probably at the bottom of the hour. But right out of plain sight. Who was it? There's an article over at Rising Tide Foundation. Probably read from that. I'm going to focus on this in, I don't know, probably first part of this week. And hopefully this is helpful. Hopefully it's edifying for folks. This is why, you know, every broadcast these days feels like Sunday morning, because this is what's going on. And it is a conponspiracy, and it is spiritual in nature, first and foremost. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
You may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue, and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed, and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
OPEC Plus cut oil production by 2 million barrels a day. I'm Peter Serafin with today's Liberty Minute. The oil-producing nations of OPEC Plus announced that they are cutting oil outputs by 2 million barrels a day. Senator Joe Manchin said the move shows that the U.S. must emphasize American energy independence and security. Seems like I've heard that before. In response to the output cut, the Biden administration announced the release of 10 million more barrels from the nation's strategic petroleum reserves. Gee, that will cover the shortfall for a whole 5 days. Then what? Biden has already drained the reserves to their lowest point in decades. Biden created this problem by forcing his green agenda and is using the nation's strategic reserves as his party's campaign checkbook to attempt to bring gas prices down before next month's elections. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product, has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Welcome back. All right. I think what we'll do is try to cram the rest of that into this segment. The rest of the video, again, it's Chuck Missler. You can find it on YouTube. The Coming World Leader, published September 7, 2012. So here's the conclusion of that. Go ahead, please.
The end times. But let's shift and talk about the mark of the beast. People who know nothing about the Antichrist all know about the 666. That's a very pop. There are books written that totally miss the point. Let's go at this. Revelation 13, and he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, that no man might buy or sell, save he that hath the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. These people take a sign of allegiance to the leader. And for some reason, they have it in their right hand and on their foreheads. And there's a couple of possibilities about that, but understand the number isn't the person's number, it's his number. They're taking his identity as a sign of allegiance. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man. And his number is 666. And around that, books have been written that talk about barcodes and inserting things and all that sort of stuff. It turns out the 666 is an inference from the Greek letters. There are three Greek letters there in the original text. And these three Greek letters have numerical values of 600, 60, and 6. So those three letters can be construed geometrically as a number 666. If that is correct, it's the only place in the Bible that the text leans on gematria, the numerical value of the letters. The fact that the letters have numerical value is very interesting from a number of points of view, but it's not used by the Holy Spirit to communicate directly, unless this is one of them. Now, these three letters have names. The first and last is the first and last letters of the word Christos. But you put this little serpent thing between the two, and you get a symbol that seems appropriate for the Antichrist. So that is played upon by some writers, and that's okay, no problem. The Antichrist, or pseudo-Christ, if you will, is symbolized by those three letters. And those three letters apparently have the number 666. So that's the subject of a lot of conjectures. But whose number are we talking about? We're not talking about our number, we're talking about his number. Insertable chips, RFID, barcodes, that has to do with my number. If I have a credit card or something, that's not the issue. It's his number that I want an identity with. They're different. See, they missed the point. And it's his number and name that are critical identity issues. Now, in Greek alphanumerics, okay, those three letters have the value, 666, as I've just shown you. And so it is whatever it's worth. People say, well, that's gematria. No, wait a minute, guys. Wait a minute. When you say gematria, what gematria are you talking about? There's the normal form of gematria. There are ones where you take the number, the values plus the number of letters. Another one, you take small values, 10. And there are all kinds of games you can play with gematria. And this is one of those places where I suggest to you, you remember, that if you torture the data long enough, it'll confess to anything. You can fool around with these numbers to prove anything you like. So I wouldn't try to prove anything with gematria. There are aspects of that that are worth studying. It's kind of fascinating, but you don't put doctrine on it. That's naive. There is a passage in Zechariah 11, which is the only physical description of the Antichrist I'm aware of in the Bible. Woe to the idol shepherd. That's not lazy. That's the false worship kind of idol. Woe to the idol shepherd that leaveth the flock. A sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean dried up, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. This leads to a conjecture that the Antichrist, who apparently suffers from a head wound, is thought to be dead and comes back to life, but he may apparently has an impaired arm, his right arm, apparently. His sword shall be upon his arm, don't know if it's right or left, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. He's blind in one eye. And it's not Moshe Dayan, that was the wrong eye, he was the left eye. But anyway, the point is, maybe the identity of his followers reflects that by having something on their forehead and their right arm to claim an identity. That's a possibility. There's even a more provocative possibility we'll come to in a minute. But that's one possibility I wanted you to be aware of.
There you go. And, you know, again, if you're paying attention, read H.G. Wells' The Shape of Things to Come and rethink about what you've been seeing in the Middle East. Rethink about the limited hangout of the Yanan plan, Eretz Israel, Greater Israel, and what's actually been happening over the last 150 years in that area. Is it the restoration of ancient Assyria? Would seem so. And what's terrifying to Americans is this means that the prophecy, so to speak, the prophetic, you know, it's not really prophetic, but vision of American primacy or hegemony or American exceptionalism being brought down on the horizon, that's happening. You know, we've heard, for example, about once the petrodollar goes away, what happens to America? What happens when the Triffin dilemma kicks in and the economic cataclysm that it produces kicks in? You know, to a certain extent, well, American hegemony, or, you know, the proxy, is relegated to the ash heap of history. And what does that portend for all of us? Stick around, we'll be right back.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite really works. Kate, great for bodybuilding or endurance athletes. I can't say enough about Extendivite. It brings more oxygen to your muscles while working out. I never bought this product for heart health, but to improve circulation, and I am not at all disappointed. I noticed an immediate boost in my gym performance, but I thought I would wait to review in case it was a placebo effect. It definitely was not. This is the most powerful supplement I have ever taken in 30 years of bodybuilding. I have taken everything. Extendivite outperforms them all. The ability to squeeze just one more rep or add just a few more pounds to the barbell depends on your ability to carry oxygen where it counts, deep inside your muscle tissues. The added benefits of heart and liver health I consider a bonus. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Listen, news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
It's the good life. Full of fun seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself. Don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. This Monday, October 10th, 2022. So, there is a conspiracy. It is international in scope, as Congressman Larry McDonald put it. And at the apex of it is the devil. And then below that, you know, you have the propagandists in Bernaysian fashion, so to speak, interpreting the enterprise to the public and public to the enterprise. And as he wrote, what was that? Chapter 3, I want to say, of propaganda. And so on this side of the curtain, you know, the ones who are kind of the headmasters of the propaganda, kind of steering the public mechanism, you can see it in the combination of Kissinger and Brzezinski. I've talked about that in the past a little bit. These guys are together at places like CSIS. I thought they were political adversaries. They're, you know, both at CSIS, or what was it, IISS. I think they were both there too, I want to say. Some of these think tanks, why are they both there? They're political adversaries. Well, you know, the administration of government is agnostic, and so now. That's much of hogwash. They're there because they may disagree on methods, but, you know, the end and the means that justifies it, nah, they agree on all of that. Just, you know, exactly what methods and what approach and stuff. And you can see this in, you know, Brzezinski's Between Two Ages, for example. You can see it very clearly. I mean, Gary Kaa quotes Brzezinski, you know, citing Pierre Teilhard de Chardin extensively, and I forget exactly which chapter it was that Brzezinski quotes Chardin, but he quotes him about a half a dozen times, and you know, mentions in the introduction, I think it is, his thanks, many thanks to folks like Samuel P. Huntington, you know, Mr. Clash of Civilizations, for helping him Brzezinski smith out Between Two Ages. What ages? Between Two Ages. America's role in the technotronic era. What is the technotronic era? I appreciate, I think it was Lark who said, read Yevgeny Zamyatin's We. That was before the turn of the 20th century, and all of the plagiarists like Huxley basically drew largely on Yevgeny Zamyatin's We. This is a thing that has been, the plan was formulated, not just hatched, it was hatched a long time ago. The reemergence of the Tower of Babel. And all that entails. And back to Genesis 6. It's where these guys are going. It's all out in plain view. That's why I'm saying, you know, that's why this broadcast is sounding like a Sunday morning thing these days. But you don't hear that kind of stuff on Sunday morning. You probably should. H.G. Wells, The Shape of Things to Come. Published in the 30s. What's he doing talking about the first conference at Basra in 1965? Talking about this winged disc, the symbol of the winged disc. Wasn't Asher the Assyrian god? The winged disc of the Assyrians? Haven't we seen that? Didn't we see that in Nazi Germany? The khaki uniform of the street and road guardians differing very little then from the one familiar to us today, appeared as if by magic all over the world, and the symbol of the winged disc broke out upon airplanes, post offices, telephone and telegraph booths, road signs, transport vehicles, and public buildings. The winged disc? Have we seen the symbol of the winged disc? I think we have, actually, over the last 100 years. There were, however, protests and a considerable variety of ineffectiveness from local self-appointed bodies and much passive resistance and failure to comply, but even the removal of the winged sign was infrequent, and usually where that occurred, nothing further ensued when the air police came whirring out of the sky to replace it. It had a number of airmen unlicensed for various reasons by the transport control. Unlicensed? That sounds like the scenario that I just mentioned about Nord Stream, doesn't it? Unlicensed for various reasons by the transport control, and it now sent a detachment of its black shirts. Remember what Alan Watt told us about the transition of the uniform from blue to black? And it now sent a detachment of its black shirts to occupy the new airplane factory outside the old Roman town of Turin. Seized small aerodrome and whatever air material was to be found. The winged disc at these two places was replaced by the National Fascists. Proclamation was made, etc., 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 calling for an assembly of the old League of Nations and reviving a long-defunct phrase of President Wilson's, the self-determination of the peoples. What's with this winged disc? There was, it seemed, how about this from page 262 of Wells, H.G. Wells, The Shape of Things to Come. There was, it seems, a curiosity in the world about Essendon. His name was better known than any of his colleagues. His portrait, though indeed through nothing worse than acquiescence on his part, got into circulation as newspapers began to abound again. It was the method of the new world government to have no presidential or secretarial signatures to its public announcements. Sounds patently Orwellian, doesn't it? It was stated simply that the control, capital C, whichever it was, or the council, capital C, suggested, stated, proposed, or had decided, and the world state, capital W and S, seal, the world state seal, with its winged disc, authenticated the document. The idea spread by impalpable means that Essendon, who was known to have made the decisive speech for immediate world government at the second Basra conference, might well have put his name whenever that seal appeared. His prestige grew and came back to his ears. There can be no doubt that his consciousness of a vague exterior support affected his attitudes toward his colleagues and their common task. The historians of our textbooks, so far as some difficult passages in the stenography can be deciphered, weigh the good and bad effects of this reinforcement of Essendon's natural and patient decisiveness. The ultimate dictator in Hayek's chapter 10, Why the Worst Get on Top, right? Natural and patient decisiveness. As Hayek put it, he's someone who's strong enough to, you know, get things done and do whatever he wants, right? They bring in other instances and compare him with other dictators Indisputably, there are crises in human affairs so urgent that many worthy considerations and qualifications are better disregarded and overborne rather than that action should be delayed. No, we can't delay action, right, dear comrades? These critics of our time study the amount of justification that can be made out of Mussolini for Stalin, Kemal, Hitler, and the various other dictators. This is the mid-30s. And the various other dictators during the economic debacle of the West, and I found this judgment of posterity very discordant with my own profoundly liberal and Anglo-Saxon prejudices. They stress the hopeless undeterminateness of the preceding parliamentary regime more than I do. They do not extend anything like the same charity to Essendon that they do to the earlier dictators. He played the strongman role half a century too late. Pattern of development, they decide, had been fully provided by De Wint and his fellow theorists. Anyway, Essendon, they insist, did not so much lead as speak first and with a needless haste when the general decision was imminent. Anyway, you can read it for yourself. I'll leave it at that. But I mentioned the article. I want to come back to this article by Cynthia Chung, published this past June 2022, titled Why H.G. Wells' The Shape of Things to Come Has Arrived Today. So I mentioned you can read Wells, you know, writing about this grand conspiracy 100 years ago, 1901. She opens with an illustration of that. Quote, it has become apparent, I think what we'll do in the coming days is, you know, I'm going to try to focus on this high level thing for a minute, and then I'm going to dive down into the specifics of how people are controlled and manipulated, because I think that control is now meta. It's at the meta level and people do not perceive it. It has been for a while, but, you know, the ultimate rub is Facebook changing its name to Meta. And I don't think people have the foggiest notion of how they are controlled and manipulated in a plethora of ways, undetectable to themselves and one another. So I think we'll go high level and then we'll dive down into the specifics of that. Anyway, Cynthia Chung's Why H.G. Wells, The Shape of Things to Come Has Arrived Today. And she quotes Wells in Anticipations of the Reaction of Mechanical and Scientific Progress Upon Human Life and Thought, published in 1901. Quote, it has become apparent that whole masses of human population are as a whole inferior in their claim upon the future to other masses, that they cannot be given opportunities or trusted with power as the superior peoples are trusted, that their characteristic weaknesses are contagious and detrimental to the civilizing fabric, and that their range of incapacity tempts and demoralizes the strong. To give them equality is to sink to their level. To protect and cherish them is to be swamped in their fecundity. That's despicable. So Cynthia Chung writes, in The Shape of Things to Come, The Ultimate Revolution, published in 1933, H.G. Wells writes of the future, predicting rather optimistically that there will be another world war in just a few years, followed by an epidemic and famine. Have we been hearing about those lately? And by the way, did Jesus warn of these kinds of things in Matthew 24, for example? In this fictional, she has that word fictional italicized, in this fictional future, war continues for 30 years into the 1960s, despite the people having forgotten why they started fighting. Kind of reminds one of The Fourth Turning by Strauss and Howe, for example. Humanity enters a new dark age. In a last bid for victory, the enemy deploys a biological weapon resulting in the wandering sickness, quote-unquote, producing the first zombies. And by 1970, the global population has dropped to a little under 1 billion. Speaking of wandering sickness, first zombies by 1970, what was the movie? So I Am Legend, There's a reboot of that, right? The I Am Legend film starring Will Smith back in, what was it, 2007? Was a reboot of The Last Man on Earth in 1964, and the one that's, I would say, more memorable, Charlton Heston, The Omega Man. Omega is interesting in esoteric circles. Again, read Gary Kaw's New World Religion. So, 1971, Omega Man. 1964, The Last Man on Earth. 1971, Omega Man. H.G. Wells is writing in the 30s about the wandering sickness producing the first zombies, and by 1970, the global population has dropped to a little under 1 billion. Continuing, though this is depicted as horrific, it is at the same time depicted as a necessity. She has that italicized. A great reset to restore the balance, so to speak. It is only with this reduced population size that the world can begin to build itself back better. See the buzz terms that she's thrown in there? From the chaos that it was, and enter into its new phase of evolution as a biologically superior species, parenthetically, the inferior having been culled by war and disease. Which, again, these guys all talked about. We've talked about that in the past, the myriad quotes by these guys saying this very thing around the turn of the 20th century, in particular, shortly before and after. Managed by a bureaucratic system under the form of a world government. This is the sci-fi fantasy of H.G. Wells and is the central theme to everything he wrote, including his works of nonfiction. The New World Order, that was a nonfiction, right? The subject on ways to reduce the world population was a troubling dilemma for Wells. Not the reducing part, but the thought that there would be those so foolish as to forbid it. You see, it was considered by some that the human species had found itself in a crisis by the 1900s. Europe, up until the 17th century, had a population size that never exceeded roughly 100 million, but nearly doubled to 180 million in the 18th century, and doubled again to 390 million in the 19th century. You know, but something tells me that Malcolm X's observation here is perhaps prescient, that we should never let the enemy define terms and tell us how many of us there are and how many of them there are and so on. H.G. Wells wrote of this, quote, the extravagant swarm of new births as the essential disaster of the 19th century, end quote. Not war, not disease, not starvation, not abject poverty, but population growth was determined as the disaster of an entire century. Doesn't that sound like the reverberating echo of the last 100 years, in particular with the Rockefeller contingent, the American eugenics effort that was exported and then re-imported, that, you know, folks like Edwin Black wrote extensively about, or the continuation of it in Bill Gates, or what Francis Fukuyama writes in Our Post-Human Future, Consequences of the Biotechnology Revolution as the New Kinder Gentler Eugenics, which is biotechnology. Isn't that the reverberating echo that we've heard for the last 100 years? Same thing that Wells was saying. Next section, she writes, the ghost of Wells' past. The knowledge of today is the ignorance of tomorrow. I think maybe I'll table this right now and go back to what I was saying that I didn't finish. If you look at Kissinger and Brzezinski, you have in them basically the synthesis of the, you know, the man behind the curtain, or on this side of the wizard's curtain, so to speak. And in Kissinger, for example, You have, if you go to his Wikipedia entry, under academic career, Henry Kissinger received his BA degree summa cum laude, Phi Beta Kappa, of course, in political science, not, you know, which Harvard, but, or not Harvard, but which Harvard, right? In political science from Harvard College in 1950. And immediately he's talking to Mike Wallace. Imagine that. How did that happen? I'll tell you how that happened. Where he lived in Adams' house, and studied under William Yandel Elliott, of all people. His senior undergraduate thesis titled The Meaning of History, Reflections on Spengler, Toynbee, and Kant. That's why he was talking to Mike Wallace. It was over 400 pages long and was the origin of the current limit on length, 35,000 words. His doctoral dissertation was titled Peace, Legitimacy, and Equilibrium. If you read either one of those two pieces, for example, The Meaning of History, Reflections on Spengler, Toynbee, and Kant, you will discover why he's the guy. You know, what Norman Dodd said about these men's careers are watched and they are groomed. Kissinger demonstrated himself a capable asset in... Just read The Meaning of History, Reflections on Spengler, Toynbee, and Kant. He's talking about all of these guys that I've been talking about in the last – the most virulent strain of those folks. And what we've seen in the last 500 years in the West is an unbroken thread of what I would call an ungodly contingent, a satanic contingent really, but patently ungodly. You know, Chuck Missler observed – that, you know, and this sort of dives down the rabbit hole. I don't want to do that right now. We're at the end of today's broadcast. But Lewis Carroll, you know, the minister, you know, Reverend Charles Litwick Dodgson, a.k.a. Lewis Carroll, psychedelics, theosophy, through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole, Alice. This gets to the subject of psychological manipulation. I mean, it gets right to the heart of it. So anyway, you look at Kissinger's The Meaning of History, Reflections on Spengler, Toynbee, and Kant, and obviously Spengler, Toynbee, Kant, you have Spinoza in there. I think Swedenborg's even in there. Same thing with Brzezinski and Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, and his reference to Chardin 9 times, no fewer than 9 times. Order out of chaos. There has thus been at work what Teilhard de Chardin has called an augmentation of consciousness, a stream whereby a continuing and transmissible tradition of reflection is established and allowed to increase. For example, what he called progress on page 34, for example. That'll do it for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative. As always, truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.